a lot of people will tell you within the community of adoptees, you know, our life doesn't start the day we were adopted. There's this whole other time and space and family that existed prior.
Society in general, they don't really understand the implications of adoption. They just feel, well, you were adopted, problem solved.
I knew I couldn't stay where I was or keep living with that grief. So moving through it was the only option.
I know in African culture, that's extremely important that you're able to put yourself into, they call it the flow of time. And it feels like that my lineage has been cut with my adoption.
There's such value in being in community among other adoptees, and it was validating for me. So that really helped for me to get connected, and then seems as if the world just opened up.
If I'm the secret that everybody has held for 37 years, you know, who can I talk to? You're affected from the moment it happens, you're impacted. But I needed to know that I was going to be able to come to an understanding and a reconciliation.
It's Jennifer Diane Gostin, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. A part of my identity is being an adoptee. You may have wondered what reunion looks like from an adoptee's point of view, or be embarking upon taking that journey yourself to search for your first family, or simply want confirmation that you are not alone in your experience. Wouldn't it be empowering to have many of your burning questions answered here? My guest today is returning as a published author. Last time she was here on February 21st, 2023, her book, Mystic Masquerade, An Adoptee's Search for Truth, was on its way to the publisher. On Valerie's website, she states, "Mystic Masquerade is a frolic through the dark subject of adoption, never fitting in. I tried on diverse characters until it became a way of life. From playing make-believe as a child to becoming an actress, I didn't know I was in search of my identity. When theatrical illusion didn't serve me anymore, I blazed a trail to find myself. The journey catapulted me beyond the question of, who am I? To a profound inquiry of, who are we as a species? Join me in traversing lies, legalities, secrets, myths, psychics, shamans, and DNA as I search the world for truth. May my bizarre story empower your own legendary identity and truth." In this episode, Valerie shares how she was able to be on the other side of writing and publishing her book. We enjoy reflecting on our in-person meetings, the healing benefit of being connected to the adoption community, her life as an adventurer, and what being an ontologist and selfologist means to her. We laugh and embrace how emotional pain from the lows in life can linger for a lifetime because of the trauma. We both hold close to the idea that any of us can start now to create a brand new ending to our story, though the start was fraught with loss. Allow me to introduce to you for the first time or again to a person who has pursued and succeeded at acting, directing, and costuming. She is an author, adoptee, story songwriter, passionate singer, repurposer, goat mama, apparatus, aka beekeeper, gardener, environmental activist, founder of an eco village, and a word inventor, might I add to the list, living in Asheville, North Carolina. She has a heart for homeless children and have projects to support her passion. Valerie, I just want to welcome you back to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. How are you doing in Asheville, North Carolina?
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for welcoming me back. And it's beautiful in Asheville right now. I don't think we've hardly had any kind of winter. The sun's out and I'm a happy camper. I'm sitting in my sunroom.
You're always a happy camper. That's why I know we're going to have fun today. We're going to have a good time and we're going to really get the audience's attention when it comes to in-person events and encounters with another adoptee, because I haven't been to Asheville yet, but you've been to Nashville last year, and I got to hug you and be in your presence. Wasn't that fun?
That was so much fun. That was the second time I got to hug you. The first time is at the American Adoptee Congress. That was 7 years ago. And I was so excited to see you at Operation Foglift in Nashville. People always get confused with Nashville and Asheville.
I know, so right?
I call Asheville a Sheville, and that way it's not confusing.
Right.
Because the women run this town, you know.
Yes, Operation Foglift. This
oh, that's so great.
Of August 2023. And I'm so glad you mentioned us meeting in Atlanta. When we recorded before, we talked about that and how you got my book and just how supportive you have been towards me. Just so warm and caring. It had been a while since we had seen each other in person. So to be together here at the farmers market, one of my favorite places in Nashville, and be a part of Liz DeBetta and Rebecca's event was just a joy. Yeah, that was great. And I got a copy of your book, right? Yay. Mystic Masquerade, An Adoptee Search for Truth. How exciting was that to have your book ready for everybody?
I was thrilled. I drove all the way to Nashville and I put up a little table and put my books on there and people got them. And oh my God, that was such an incredible Operation Foglift. The filming station was just an awesome venue.
Yes.
I'm a story song singer and I'm writing about my book. I have a whole bunch of story songs about my adoption adventures. And I met, oh, golly, her name's skipping me right now. She wrote a book, Saved by a Song, Mary Gauthier. And I was thrilled to meet her. I got her book and just ate it up, the kind of work she does with telling her story and how it's helped so many people. And I met so many other adoptees at the tribe and people in the triad and people in the adoptee army, which I'm part of.
Yeah.
And, you know, the army is working on changing the narrative of adoption. Oh my God. I watched that film again, Reckoning with the Primal Womb, and I can watch that over and over again. I highly recommend it to anyone considering adopting that they watch this documentary, Reckoning with the Primal Womb. It'll open your eyes.
Yeah, Rebecca Autumn, she did a fabulous job with that film. Yeah. And it was good to meet her in person and Liz, because I hadn't met them in person yet either. So yeah, it was like a mini conference, wasn't it?
It was. One of the great things about it too, not only meeting the other parts of the Adoptee Army and getting my Adoptee Army sweatshirt, but afterwards, there was a party bus, and we got on that bus and sang and hugged, and the music was blaring, and we toured around Nashville, and it was so much fun. I've had a horrible bonding issues in my past, but the party bus, I mean, it was just so nurturing. Partying, I felt so much camaraderie hanging out with my tribe. That was a highlight.
Yeah, that party bus is so popular here, usually for bachelorette parties. But I saw the picture, and it looked like you all had a great time. I'm glad you got to do that.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Before we get into your book, and I'm going to read something when we jump into that. I'm going to read quite a few things, but one thing I'll start with. But before we do that, I want to say that I missed you at Hireth Hope and Healing. I had to leave. I needed to leave earlier than planned. And I just was so disappointed that I didn't get to spend time with you and everybody else. It was really put together very well. I met people, a few people, before I had to leave. Tell me what that experience was like for you.
Oh, well, that was another experience of meeting even more of my adoptee tribe. I originally got connected into that because of Operation Foglift. I just loved it. I was a newbie, one of the few newbies there. And like I said, I have a hard time bonding, or I have in the past, but I really connected with some people there. And I really was so looking forward, because I knew you were coming, to being with you and seeing with all the new things that are going on with you and learning from you. And I was really disappointed that you weren't there. I'm like, where is she? Where is she? And so I'm so sorry that that didn't happen. And I was looking forward to sitting in the hot tub with you.
Well, I apologize. I do. I felt bad for a long time, actually, behind that, because I had expected to be able to stay. I want to go back to Operation Foglift when you were in Nashville, because this is worth mentioning, to just give another example of how you are in the world. So I was wearing that black glittery cap at the farmer's market and most of the day, right? And so I remember you asking me if I knew of a store that you could, you know, grab a few things that you needed. And I couldn't think of anything, but you being the person you are, you found a place. And you showed up later on and you gave me the cutest pair of glittery shorts that match that cap. And I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at the shorts right now, and it just warmed my heart. Not only you taking the time to find them, but your generosity is through the roof. Like you, that's just who you are, and it's so inspiring to me. So I just want my listeners to know that's who Valerie is. So thank you again.
I love people when they dress up. You know, it's like, oh. They're not afraid. Look, get out there. And I saw that black sequin hat. I Googled where to go because I love to go to thrift stores. So I'm not that generous. And I had a fabulous thrift store. And there when I walked in were these black sequin shorts. And I thought, oh, my God, she's got to wear that on the party bus tonight. So I got it. But I think a lot of adoptees are thrifters, and I think the reason is that we don't want to be taken advantage of. We're not going to go and spend $150 on a pair of black sequin shorts when we can get at a thrift store that look brand new. Oh, my God.
That is a good point.
It was so much fun. I love going to thrift stores.
I love going, too. I don't even know if I found out where you went, but I do want to know where you went so that I can visit there too.
It was on a corner, I can tell you that.
Okay, we'll get to that after we finish up, because there's so much I want to talk to you about as it relates to your wonderful book. I loved it. I love your writing style and your adventures, right? Like life, yeah. I love the word journey. Life is a journey. But I'm leaning into it's an adventure for sure. And you took me on this ride throughout the pages. And one of the nicknames you gave me back in, I think, was it 2017, was
Baby BB.
You beat me to it. Baby BB. Yes, Bonnie at Birth. Baby Bonnie at Birth. And you, oh, wow. I'm looking at the front of the cover of your book, which is beautiful, this bright red. And let me just say, when I carried my book with me everywhere I went, in case I got stopped by a train, I could pull it out and read. Pretty much everywhere I went, people said, what are you reading? And I know it was the cover. It was a cover that just spoke to them. They were so interested and curious. What is that about? Right? And you autographed it to me, Bonnie at Birth, to the best detective and podcaster friend. I appreciate you. May the truth always light your path. Blue moon in August 2023.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you for that. And I'm going to read the very beginning, chapter 1, just one paragraph, Myths. I was taken from my mother's womb at birth, never to see her again. Unhailed, I entered a frigid black hole with no compass. As an infant, there was no way to grasp what had happened. Life catapulted me into an abyss of mystery that took decades to unravel. So let us start there. Tell me how you came to write this beautiful book.
Well, I kept journals throughout my life, you know, the little old diaries with a lock on it. And I did that continually. It was one point where I took some of those diaries and just excerpt stuff and kept that and threw those away. But I'm telling you, don't throw your journals away. They can be so helpful later. Had I not had all of my journals throughout the year, especially my journals of my search, which was like 5 decades, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't remember whether I lived with the Maori tribe before I, you know, did a psilocybin journey and a vision quest. Or the timelines were so important to go back to my journals and say, oh, that happened before that. And then making a timeline was super helpful, so I didn't get off track. Because I'd written so much, and if I didn't have a date on when I was written, I was lost, and I would have to piece it back together. But the journey of writing my book really only started to fulfill itself a few years ago, and that's when I felt like I had succeeded in my quest to find out who I was. It was a long process of getting my book read. It was twice as thick as it is now. And through editing processes, I had 2 editors go through it. And one was like, oh my God, this is, you need to publish this. This is a travel journal. And I'm like, no, I'm doing this so that people in the adoptee world can get another glimpse. And then I started reading some books adoptees had written, and it was like, yeah. It wasn't until maybe 5 years ago that I was a little longer than that, when I was doing research on my search itself, that I came across adoptee groups that were in social media, and I delved into that. So I'm a member of Fireside Adoptees and a lot of other groups that are either on Facebook or some other media like Instagram, which I'm on. And those were amazingly helpful. And when I saw how much trauma so many adoptees have, I was like, oh my God, I really want to share my story with them. And the help, because the camaraderie, like that I felt at Operation Foglift, and that was way late after I had read my book, but the camaraderie of other adoptees and others in the adoption triad is one of the best things that you can do for yourself for healing, is to connect with these people. They are your tribe. And it's meant so much to me. The first time I ever connected to a bunch of people like that was at the 7 years ago at the Adoption Congress. That was amazing.
Journaling is so helpful to keep the timeline and to be able to describe where you were and when you were there. I wanted to say that India, when you talk about your 11 years in India, you put me there. Your descriptions were so good.
Well, India was something that happened to me that I never imagined I'd even go to India. You know, in India, I learned something very important. I was also publishing a book there, and I got to the publishers and they weren't there. And then I had to go back, and it's like, I was in Delhi, and it's like, oh, 2 hours to get across Delhi. And then when I finally met up with the person, I'm like, you know, you need to tell me if you're going to be late or whatever. I've come all the way across, you know, Delhi to get here. And he goes, oh, I am sorry. You know, lateness happened to me. I'm like, oh, that's what it is. Late happened to me. Like, he didn't take any responsibility. And so I've used that ever since. If I'm ever late, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Lateness happened to me.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I know you call yourself an ontologist. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
And you write on page 180. I love this paragraph. For years, I called myself an ontologist and figured that the study of beingness applies to us all, right? Writing turned me on to studying myself in a new way. I decided my new role was that of a selfologist. I looked it up in the dictionary and was surprised to find out it's not a word, and there are no origins for it. Well, I didn't know where I came from, so that suited me fine. I called my writing practice deep selfology. I love that.
I'm always making up words. I'm so surprised that they're not real words.
Right.
But they make sense to me.
I love that.
Yeah, being an ontologist, it's like, it's on my passport. And they never ask me because they don't know what it is. So I think they're embarrassed to know that they don't know. And so I just smile. Mm-hmm. But we're all ontologists.
Yes, yes. And you write on page 178, going back to what you learned in India. Although I still ask the Almighty for guidance, I know my soul, my higher self, gives the answers. One of the most significant gifts I received during my 11 years in India was learning how to trust me first. That's all I could guide people to do, to learn to trust themselves. Beautifully written. And when I think about the highs and lows and ebbs and flows, for sure, in your story, that makes me think that that is the adventure. That is the journey of each of us in our lives. And the way you are very transparent and very vulnerable in how you felt when certain things would take place, when certain people seem to not want you in the room.
Right.
Yeah. And I think for me reading it, it suggests that, yeah, these things happen that are heartbreaking. You know, when you talk about the stuffed animal that you wanted, if your mother, your birth mother should pass before you, it's hard. Like these things that happen, they touch us in ways or I guess they aggravate the trauma that's like buried, and we must go on. We know we have to pull out whatever tools and keep going, but yeah, it's difficult in the midst of it. And you describe how that was for you. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Oh, just you talking about it, my heart chakra is like booming. Between my heart chakra and my solar plexus, it's like, oh God, yes, I remember that. That was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had this little stuffed monkey. And when you read my book, you'll find out that and my birth story, I was told, is not that I came delivered by a stork, but that I was from the monkey jungle in Miami. And my parents used to take us there all the time so I could visit with my tribe, right? it's a longer story about how a monkey weaves in and out of my life. But when I saw that monkey she had with the heart on it, you pressed it, it said, "I love you." I told her, I said, "I really want that monkey." And she goes, "Oh, no." I said, "Well, how come?" She goes, "Well, my friend gave it to me." I said, "What friend?" Oh, she didn't remember. I thought, well, how can this be so important to her when it's so important to me? And so she agreed to safety pin a note on the back of it. It said, "I belong to Valerie." In case she passed away, that monkey would come to me. But I was a secret to the family. Oh, my mother passed a few years ago on Christmas night. That's when I began to finish my whole book. It was heartbreaking. It got thrown away. Yeah, the things like that hurt. I had to write about it. I had to write that. I'm writing another song about it, too. It's like writing really helps and to deal with our traumas. There was another time I talked to her that just is ingrained to my being. And it's like when I finally was able to meet her, I said, "It must have been really hard to give me up," which is what I imagined, right? I imagined some guy got her pregnant and left her and blah, 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 blah. And the stories we tell ourselves when we don't know the truth. Oh, my God. It's crazy. But you know what she said when I said, "It must have been hard for you to give me up." He laughed. Oh, no. That wasn't hard. "But your father looked for you for a long time." Oh, my God. My world absolutely turned upside down. I had every emotion you could possibly imagine between terror, pain, and extreme joy. I'd always thought, you know, whoever my father was must have been a schmuck. When the truth was, is he was the loving one. How was I supposed to know that? Oh, my God. But it was harder finding him than her. I never did get to meet him. Yeah, these traumatic things that occur to us throughout our lives, I mean, it's there. And even though you have a mala, you know, a mala has 108 beads, and when you break it, you can string it back together, but there's always that knot there. And that's the same for a lot of us adoptees that finally find, you know, where we came from, and then it's broken again. And then we put it back together and we go on. But the knot is always there. I think it's like a wound that scabs over, and then all of a sudden something happens and you scratch it and it opens again. And then you kind of go through the process of the healing and let it scab over again. But that thing that happened to begin with is always there. It's not that we forget about it. It's that we move through that as we mature and we grow and we create our own emotional intelligence over these things so we don't react.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that. And I am sorry that, you know, you went through so much pain. I think that the painful parts of our life, I've recently heard, can be considered gifts in time. Certainly, it's not right away. It's never easy to do the work. I like what you wrote towards the end of your book, page 268. In James Sherman's book, Rejection, he urges us not to fixate on the past. He said, "You can't go back and make a new start, but you can start right now and make a brand new ending."
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
Well, that means be in the now.
as much as possible. I mean, things are going to trigger you. And once you get to the point where you have emotional intelligence about what the source of the triggering is, you're able to go beyond that and have a deeper compassion for yourself. So that I think is important. And the other thing I think is super important is the fact that we don't know, most of us have no idea what our previous lives were about. And I do believe in reincarnation, especially after living in India 11 years and seeing the miraculous things I saw. But we don't know what our lessons from the past life have put us on a trajectory in this life to deal with. I personally also believe that the most important thing anyone can learn in this life is that we never die. The soul never dies. For me, that's kind of an experiential statement. And for most people, that's not something that they really are able to wrap their heads around. But that's my belief. This is why I definitely don't judge people for what's going on in their life. And we all need support for any of the tragedies that happen to us, relinquishment, abuse, whatever. We need support, which is why finding your tribe, like the adoption tribe, is so important, because these are the people who can resonate what's going on with you. Maybe it's happened to them before. But the thing is if we can be in the present moment and not drag our past with us like a bunch of rocks hanging on our head. I once was in a vision quest. There were a few of us that went up the mountain. And we were to stay there until we knew we were ready to come out of our medicine circle of prayer ties. And this one girl that was going up as well carried this giant like duffel bag full of rocks. And that was to symbolize to her all the stuff she's carrying with her that she really doesn't need to be carrying today. That affected me. I'm like, yeah, right. What am I going to drop? What do I not need to continue to carry forth in my everyday life every single day? A lot of that can be the past traumas that we've had. But we have to understand that when we can identify where our reactions to something is stemming from, like for me, the bonding issue I have stems from being taken from my mother at birth. I'm scared to bond, or I have been, but I don't carry that anymore. I mean, being at like Operation Fog Lift and with other adoptees has helped so much. And being able to find people that I can resonate with, who can understand. If you have a bonding issue that you kind of, don't engage that much. And I'm a very outgoing person, but as far as a deep bond, that has been one of my biggest challenges of my life. And it's kept me away from numerous relationships that might have been just beautiful. But I think that the traumas that we have, like the trauma of me with, my not receiving this love monkey that I wanted, that affects me. Every time I see a monkey, I think about it. I have numerous stuffed monkeys. I put one up on Instagram about it with all my monkeys around me. But yeah, we have trauma. Everybody has trauma. And I think the primal wound of that separation is one of the biggest anyone can experience. So we're going to have it, and we're going to have things come up, and we've got to be able to pinpoint where it came from and have that, I'll say it again, emotional intelligence to see it, recognize it, and move on. you know, you got to grieve. And so the grieving is important. People have to grieve their losses. And that's good. And one of the ways to grieve as well is by writing. That helped me so, so much. I encourage everybody to do it. Do it.
I do too.
Whether you think you can write or not, just write. Keep journals of everything you can remember that happened, what coping mechanisms you used, whether they were successful or not, what were your strategies you tried. And while you're doing that, you're going to find that it's very healing for you. Well, at least it was very healing for me. I can't speak for everyone, but others in the triad need to hear our stories. We're not alone. If you have problems writing, one way to get started, a friend did this to me and it really helped. They asked me some questions and recorded everything. They recorded the conversations and I went on and on and on and on and on. And it's a trick, really, to get you talking about your journey, whatever that journey is. Then afterwards, you can transcribe it and keep it in your book files. But, you know, it's not about editing at all. It's about getting it out there, writing it down. Later, I don't suggest trying to do any editing until you've written at least most of your book. And it may not look like a book at all. It may look like a bunch of pages from different scenarios. I guarantee you, by writing about it, it will help you. And by writing about your trauma will also help you move through that to the point where you have that intelligence. If anybody really wants to do that and they're scared or they're intimidated or they don't know where to start, call me. Get on my website, ValerieNaiman.com, and send me a contact. And in my book, I also have my email address is in there if you want to contact me as well. And my book's available on ebook and a print book. And it got to number one on Amazon. I was so excited. That was my goal. I wanted to get to number one without paying for it. If you look on Amazon, you see all these number one books. If you look close, it says sponsored. Do you know what that means? That means they paid for that. I wasn't going to do that. So when I hit number one, I was like, yes!
Congratulations!
Oh. And yeah. It's weird. I hit number one in a personal transformation. I hit number one in, I think, ecology and then adoption. And of course, they all bottomed out after that. I mean, I don't know why I got that big perk. I think a lot of books got sold at the same time. A lot of ebooks. I've sold more ebooks than I have print books. But after I got to that number one, I'm like, all right, that was my goal. I'm done, which was dumb. I just let everything fall away and I went on a cruise. So once I got to number one, I felt like, well, I succeeded. That was my mission, was to get to number one. And I got to number one in unusual categories, which was personal transformation, which I didn't expect, mysticism, and I thought it would be adoption, right? But it finally did get to number one on adoption. Only lasted like a couple of days. But now it's bottomed out because after I hit number one and felt like I had succeeded and reached my goal, I let it go and I have not been promoting my book very well. There's so much to do. It's hard for me to try and promote myself. I hope some people have heard this and will get my book.
Well, I think they absolutely should. It's really so well done, so interesting, fascinating. Again, the highs and lows and how that affected you. And I think you inspire anyone to keep going and to just find the tools you need, the people along the way, as you stated, the community can be one of the best resources to help you stay the course. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I will include in the show notes how to get a copy, a link to your website. I know you mean it when you tell the listeners that they can reach out to you with regard to wanting to write, to get started. I just think you're such a dear and beautiful person, full of life, full of just that energy.
That's right.
Say that again.
I'm full of it. That's right.
You have the energy that doesn't come along every day. I mean, in terms of your smile and your supportiveness and your generosity, like I know you're in my corner. And if you're doing it for me, that's just how you're showing up in the world. I'm so happy your book is out there. I'm glad I have a copy. I'm just glad to know you and that our paths have crossed. I too believe in synchronicities, and I pay attention to the signs that are all around all of us that lead us in the direction that we're to go.
Yeah, follow what I call the living language. That's what I call how the universe speaks to me. If I pay attention to the signs, I believe the universe looks for people who are open to getting out of their own way, their own agenda, and are able to hear, see, or feel a call from the universe, or whatever you want to call the almighty divine energy. I'm going by the living language. That's how I take my course. I would also encourage anybody who's listening who is in the triad who's a musician, get a hold of me. I am doing an album. It's a story album of my songs about my adoption journey. I'm having a lot of fun with this. And each song has different instruments or different things going on, a different band. So if you play an instrument or you're a singer and want to be on my album with me, preferably if you live close to Asheville, North Carolina, I'd love that because I'm just almost finished with my audiobook. And then the next big project is finishing the music album.
And that takes us right into you singing something for all of us. I'm excited about that. And before you do that, is there anything I didn't ask you that you want to share?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm just open to everything. So I'm good. And if you want to hear a little flip of a song, you can also go on my website and hear part of the audiobook, and you can hear a blip of a song. Here you're not going to get a whole blues band behind me, which is what I did for this song, but I'm just going to sing a few verses to give you an idea. And I love story songs. And so here's one. I never seemed to belong, so I coped by being strong, thinking I could do it all by myself, yeah. But I was so wrong. It's connection I needed all along. You let me go, but the bond remains. 'Cause your blood is running through my brains. You stole my identity on my birthday. So I learned to role play, making myself up all along the way. Well, has the identity I become a lot like you? Do you walk and talk and sing the blues like I do too? Oh, anyway, it goes on and on. And I've got numerous songs. Not all of them are blues. I'm going to do a country too. I've got one with a violin, and it's going to be fun. I'm really excited about this project. And I just stay alive with all this. And that also helps me not burn out for the work I'm doing and trying to change the narrative around adoption. Because that's a big project, too, with the adopting army. Yeah, I just hope everybody keeps writing. If you're a singer, sing it out.
Very good. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. And yeah, be sure, listeners, to go to her website, Valerie Naiman. And Naiman is spelled N-A-I-M-A-N. ValerieNaiman.com. You've got a beautiful website. That bright red cover. Oh, my goodness. Beautiful cover to your book.
Thank you so much. Those are my eyes on the book Behind the Mask.
Are they?
Yes.
If you told me that, I forgot. Wow. It's a beautiful cover. It definitely draws a lot of attention. Well,
thank you. A lot of people said you cannot do your own cover. You cannot do your own cover. So I got on this thing and I had somebody do a few covers and I didn't like them at all. I ended up doing my own cover.
Well, beautifully done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. I knew we'd have a good time. And thank you so much for taking the opportunity for this conversation.
I'm so excited to have done it. I love getting the word out and I love sharing with my fellow tribe.
Valerie has stated many times to me that adoptees are like her comrades, people who she shares a friendship because of a shared difficulty. She lovingly accepts being in community as often as possible, regardless of any kerfuffles that might surface with people in pain. I feel Valerie's genuine concern for others and how she is only interested in positively impacting their life by the way she lives hers. When she steps in the room, her energy lights up the place because she's living a life designed by her. Throughout the pages of Valerie's book, Mystic Masquerade, she bears her soul and shares the gut-wrenching truth of being rejected during times in reunion by those she only wanted to feel a sense of belonging with. I found myself getting angry and then sad with those putting her through that emotional roller coaster. They simply didn't understand the life of an adoptee. Yet, she stayed the course to meet with on more than one occasion the mother who gave her birth. Valerie's description of the 11 years spent in India put me right there. Her words vividly painted a picture in my mind of that country, and I'd love to go visit there one day. Her writing style created a page-turner. I wanted to read more about all of her escapades. Thank you, Valerie, for having this conversation with me. It was fun, endearing, informative, and an opportunity for others to get to know you like I do. I believe you will always be up to something creative and interesting that reflects the person you have come to know in yourself. Lastly, I'll read your words on the back cover of Mystic Masquerade. The synchronicities that emerge in our lives have huge potential to show us the way. If we set the rational mind aside and pay attention to the signs, the mystery can lead us to the truth. I want to thank every guest for saying yes to a conversation with me, every participant, especially in the early days, and the audience for listening to some of the most extraordinary people I've had the pleasure of meeting. This endeavor has positively exceeded my every expectation, and it wouldn't have been possible without your gifts and time. If you're an adoptee and would like to share your adoption journey, visit JenniferDianeGolston.com. If you like Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow and or give, hopefully, a 5-star rating so others can find it too. Thank you for being here.